You're listening to the Girl Banker Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bartholomew. The Twiggs Group loves community bank marketing. Your marketing activities must include consistent content, authentic messaging, and many other creative components to grow your market share and connect with your customers. Visit welovecommunitybanks.com to see how the Twiggs Group can help you with your bank marketing. Hey, all you Girl Bankers out there. Be sure to join the Girl Banker Facebook group where you, along with over 3,000 other women in banking across the country, are sharing ideas, asking questions about best practices, and offering daily motivation to one another. This community has been so helpful to me in my banking career, and I have no doubt that you will find tremendous value in it as well. All you have to do is search for the Girl Banker group in Facebook, answer the questions, and verify that you are, in fact, a woman in banking, and join in on the fun. I'll see you there. Hey, Girl Banker podcast listeners. I'm here to tell you about the new Life is Grand podcast brought to you by Grand Savings Bank. I might be a little biased, but I'm sure excited to tell you guys about this new podcast where a revolving cast of Grand Savings Bank team members uncover the things that make our community so special. Join me and our vice chairman, Tyler Steele, as we host the Life is Grand podcast, now available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Grand Savings Bank is a member FDIC Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Girl Banker podcast listeners, we are rolling out the red carpet today. We have the one, the only Jill Casilla here today. I am so pumped to have you on this podcast. We've talked about this for a long time, so it's certainly great to have you here. Jill is the president and CEO of Citizens Bank of Edmond. And unless you've been living under a rock for the last, two, 3 years, y'all, she's everywhere. She's such a huge glass ceiling breaker for women in banking. Her accolades are too long to list on this podcast. Look her up. Look at all that she's accomplished. Jill, welcome to the Girl Banker podcast.
I'm so excited to finally be on, Natalie.
Well, it's so great to have you here. And in case anyone hasn't heard how you got started in banking, and I know you've got a really cool story, but can you give us a brief overview of how you got into banking and to where you are today?
I mean, we all have winding roads. So mine started, I grew up really poor in Eastern Oklahoma, and I worked at the local grocery store, and the community banker in town was Lurleen Mabry. The Mabry family owned a bank there, and she was chairwoman of the board, and I would carry groceries out for her and her husband, who was the former CEO of the bank, but at the time when I was carrying groceries out for them, he was suffering from Alzheimer's, and so I got to engaged with Mrs. Mabry quite a bit. And she always was asking where I was going to college and was encouraging me to think beyond my small town and would pay for me to go on different activities and such in high school. And just was all, every time I saw her, I knew that I would have to have an answer for her as to where I was going to college, what I was going to do after graduation, things like that. So I really had this wonderful perspective of what a community banker did outside of just deposits and loans. Kind of fast forwarding ahead, I went to Oklahoma State. I was an engineering major there. I was paying my own way and working at the grocery store in Stillwater all night and then going class through the day. And my sophomore year, I started running out of money. I was having to leave school. I really didn't know what to do. My grades were great. I was really involved on campus, but I just had no money left. And I was like at the point of about to leave, and I happened to carry groceries out for an Army recruiter. He told me that the Army would help pay for college and that it could really light the pathway again for me to be able to get my education. And so I enlisted the next day. I ended up coming back home, finding that a family member had stolen all my money. So I had planned to go back to college and get my engineering degree, but God had other plans. And so I found a school in South Texas that gave me a scholarship. It was in Kingsville, Texas. I had never been there before. I had to get rides to get down to Kingsville, Texas. So it's about a 15-hour drive from Oklahoma City, where I was. And then I met my husband, Marcus, there. Marcus was a year ahead of me in school, and we were both in ROTC, and he got his commission, and he had told me that he was going to get his master's degree and that we should get married, and he was going to stay there while I finished my degree. And so we got married, and then he immediately got orders to go to basic course, and he's not very detail-oriented, I now know. And so he ended up getting orders to go to Hawaii, and so I thought I would take a semester off, follow him there, helped kind of set up house, and then finished school back in Kingsville. We ended up, you know, we're in our early 20s in Hawaii on the government's dime. And so I was working at a t-shirt shop there to kind of pass the time. I was taking some classes at the University of Hawaii to transfer back to my school. And my boss there, her name is Sandy, and she just said, you love math and science, but you love people. And I was going to these like economic briefings about tourists and knew how we could stock inventory based upon what the composition of the tourists coming into the Hawaii were. And so she said, you know, you love this human behavior. You should think about finance or economics. So I went to the school that was located just down the street, and they were very lenient and transferring my engineering classes for some basic business classes, and ended up taking 33 hours a semester while I worked full time to finish my finance degree in a year. And at the same time, my mother married into the family that owns the bank where I am now. And so it's, as luck would have it, the account that was emptied by a family member was also at Citizens Bank of Edmond. And so my husband and I left the military and came back to Oklahoma. My stepdad offered me a minimum wage job in the bookkeeping department. And then I applied for my dream job at the Federal Reserve. It was right when Monster.com and HotJobs.com came out. And there was a management development program that the Kansas City Fed was recruiting for. And I applied for that. I got the job. I couldn't believe it. That's a whole story in of itself. Ended up staying at the Fed for about a decade, rotating to different departments. I managed everything from HR to system-wide check 21. And all the Federal Reserve check processing sites, their hardware and software. And then the Fed sent me to get my master's degree in economics. And then they ultimately sent me to the Graduate School of Banking at the University of Wisconsin. And there, you know, you get to pretend to run a bank. And I felt like this overwhelming spirit of Lurleen Mabry, kind of George Bailey attributes of being a community banker, plus the beauty of the business model. And I just fell in love with it. And so one of my classmates recruited me to be his senior finance officer in northern Minnesota. And so I took that job and then ended up at Citizens when they got into trouble. My stepdad asked for my help to help turn around the bank. And that was about 11 years ago. So that's the long wow. journey. So a big answer to a little question.
But I think it's so fascinating because that's one of the first questions I always like to ask guests is, you know, what is your girl banker story? And yours is definitely unique in that there's a lot of different experiences that you had that have clearly shaped who you are today as a leader. And something that's even more unique about you is that you have this military background that I think that most women in banking don't have. So talk to us about how that experience and the lessons that you've learned there have equipped you for what you're doing today.
Well, I mean, the military at the time, I really was using it to help me. And I didn't realize how much the military was shaping me as a person, as a mother, as a wife, and as a leader. You know, when you're brought into the Army, especially as a private like I was, everyone is brought in from all these areas of the country. And many of them don't know, including me, basic ways, maybe take care of your body, what ethics are, how do you manage assets? Like not like multimillion-dollar assets, but you know, how do you take care of your weapon and make sure that no one can take your weapon from you? And then there's like general orders that you have to memorize. And what was really profound to me was there was always, you know, as a private, you're supposed to follow every single order, but they made it really clear that it is your personal responsibility to not follow illegal orders or orders that are unethical, and that you have a responsibility as a private to potentially disregard an order that a general gives you because you are supposed to be ingrained with this military character to do the right thing, that mission first, people always, and you never detract from those things to do something that would be lying or stealing or cheating or causing harm to someone outside the rules of war. And it was just really profound in how it shaped me. You get to see unethical leadership and ethical leadership and how that either one was rewarded. And as a woman, I was oftentimes the only woman in my unit. And so you're having to, you know, get kind of used to some things, but you also stand up and say when other things are not acceptable, and you look for other women to stand up for as well. You know, I had real interesting experiences in the military that I hope because of saying something early on. You know, I hope that changed for women that followed me. And I, that professional courage that was encouraged and fostered that I really didn't know was happening is something that I still carry with me, that, you know, I still will stand up in the face of wrong, or even if I'm the only one. And that comes from that military experience. And I'm really grateful I get to serve as a civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army now. So I get to work with soldiers and bring other young women into the Army and tell my Army story, knowing that the military isn't perfect, but it is a great laboratory for the development of leadership. And they do that with you from a private on through the commissioning ranks.
That is just so incredible. And I'm imagining, too, the mental toughness that it created. I mean, you know, and being the CEO of a community bank, and especially with the things that you've accomplished with this bank, that takes grit. It takes bravery. It takes just the willingness to step out of your comfort zone. So there's no doubt that you definitely gained that from that experience. That's so, so impressive.
For sure. I mean, you face failure on a daily basis too there, and you're always pushed to the limits, and you're around people who aren't necessarily motivated. And so to try to figure out a way to get everyone to accomplish a task that don't necessarily want to is really one of the great fun leadership experiences I've had. At the time, it was terrible, but it carried with me to where I am today.
Yeah. And that segues perfectly to my next question, which was, how do you stay motivated? Anyone that keeps up with you from the social aspect of what all Citizens is doing and what all you're doing, y'all are constantly, that's my Arkansas there, y'all, pushing the envelope, doing new things, getting outside the box. And it appears that you're on go, 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 go. You've got kids that are both, I guess, at West Point now, or getting ready to be both at West Point. You have a lot of different moving parts in your life, not just with the bank and all that you've got going there, but as a mom and as a wife. So how do you stay motivated and not burn out?
Well, loaded question. Offline, so that's probably a really loaded question for me, because I think we all face those times where we do feel a little burned out and a little worn down. So we have two kids, and one kid in college still. She's at the Naval Academy, and we have one that graduated from West Point. Then we have one still at home. He's a sophomore in high school, and so he's completely virtual learning right now. But as far as like staying motivated, from a professional sense first, I don't know if you've seen the movie Moana. It's been a few months since I've seen it, so I may not fully capture everything as accurately as I would like. But, you know, there's like this darkness that's coming over the world, and she's like hurrying up against it and then also trying to fight against it as well. And that's what banking feels like for me right now. There's just this great sense of urgency that our team has to know that community banking is changing and we don't know where it's going. And we don't want to be the taxi cab industry with an Uber just completely disrupting and making us relics. We have to find what we're going to be. And there's not a touchstone. There's not someone out there that you can point to that's like, okay, we'll just be a fast follower of them. What we've embraced is just being audacious enough to say that we want to be around for another 100 years. And we don't know what relevancy of community banking is going to look like, but we're willing to blaze the trail. And with that, that sense of urgency, knowing that any day this disruption could be profound and permanent, we would rather not be a victim to that. We want to set where the course of community banking is going. And so with that, it gives you a lot more control, a feeling of control, and it ignites that passion that there's, it's always easier to lead when you have an enemy, and our enemy is irrelevancy. And it is just around the corner. Like you feel it, it's coming. And there's a little bit of anxiety about that. So it makes you run a little faster versus it being that we're just wanting to be better to be better's sake.
We don't want to be Blockbuster, right?
Exactly. And we are so close. We are just so close to being that. I was on a panel with the Square Capital CEO, so the arm of Square that's banking, and her ability to get access to data of what small businesses' receipts are looking like and what their expenses are is so real time that if you're a small business banker, it should scare you to death because we're still looking at tax returns.
Right.
And be like
outdated.
People know their needs right now, and right. whether you know, now they're up on an upswing where they had a COVID dip or vice versa, and able to really know a business well. And you know, that disruption, again, I think COVID has accelerated us to being closer to that darkness. And so it really motivates our team to really hustle and try to find not just what the best product is on the shelf, but thinking, well, we can just create it if it doesn't exist, and let's try it. If we fail small. We don't fail at the customer's expense, but we're going to stumble through progress, and that the purpose is the progress.
Absolutely. I think that this overarching concept of that we are just at the brink of being expired is probably not something that community bankers have really thought about until the last, what, 3-5 years? I think we always felt like there's this long longevity. They would always be there. But we're seeing that change, and what we're dealing with right now has cut that time in, well, not even in half, more than that. Like, we are just about there. If we don't get our crap in gear, we're going to get left behind.
It's so true. And I think PPP may have given us a false sense of security. I mean, it definitely showed the level of connection we have, our communities, and our willingness to step up. But yeah. it can't just be that. Like, we have to figure out how to lead through this.
Yes, 100%. Which is another great segue to my next question, which is, you know, you're such a role model for women in banking. You're a role model to community bankers that are looking to be different. I know that you guys probably notice that you get copied a lot with your fun initiatives. I know that's a common form of flattery, but, you know, everyone wants to be like you guys. But who are your role models? Who influences you?
That's a great question. It's so kind of you to say that we're role models, because we are so inspired by many, many bankers that are out there in other industries. One of my favorite banks is Bank of Ann Arbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the thing I love about Tim Marshall, that's the CEO of that bank, is he is willing to drop everything and be a mentor to me, to share information, to be transparent. We started a street festival over 7 years ago, and I knew that Tim was doing something similar. And he just opened up his staff and the books and just said, here, however we can help you. So someone who's innovative like he is, but also cares about our industry, wants to connect with others, and it doesn't just disregard someone else's weird. I mean, wants to lean into having a relationship. So I just love that bank and the great work that they do, and Tim's visionary leadership. He's a great banker, but also very creative. I look at like Patrick Sales with Quantic and what they're building there, you know, more of the digital focus, but with the CDFI components, and just the, again, kind of that purpose is the progress really comes from that organization. Just looking, being humble enough to know that you don't have it figured out, but you're going to step forward and you're going to encourage your staff to do the same. So they're another one that I find extremely inspiring. The work that you're doing, Natalie, I just love that you're using your voice so well, and banks that support their team members to step out and have their own identity, and to be, again, have that audacity to think that we can really change the conversation or lead conversations in our industries and our communities and our nation. You know, I love that too. So there's just so many people out there, but it's those that really want, because there's bankers that will gossip about you when you do things differently. And that, I just had it yesterday. Someone mentioned like, oh yeah, I was talking to this other banker and they said, yeah, Jill does a lot of weird things. And, you know, and the people will laugh at you when you're doing weird things, but you know, that when you're trailblazing and you've got a staff that pushes you to continue experimenting, you're going to get criticism, and you're going to have those that don't understand you and those that try to push you down, especially when you look different from them or right. whenever you have a different background. And so, you know, it takes friends like you that are encouraging one another and helping continue those steps forward.
Yeah. And you're so right. I mean, haters are going to hate, and they're not even usually in the same arena to even have that opinion to begin with. And it's easy to want to quit when you hear that stuff, but it's also in some cases motivating to me to hear that. Like, well, you know, that's too bad for you that you feel that way, because that's not going to get you anywhere in life.
Yeah. And you know, it is just playing two different games. Like, we're not really concerned about our competition. We're concerned about our relevancy. And whenever you start thinking things from an infinite standpoint, kind of the difference between a Microsoft and an Apple, yeah. I think Simon Sinek, that has this great infinite game book, as well as tons of videos that are just so fun to watch. whenever people start seeing that you really don't worry about the competition, that you're worried about yourself, it's very intimidating and you are playing different games. So it's important to have people there that you can connect with, that understand. Sure. And are playing a similar game as you are.
Well, and that perspective is everything too, like you're saying. I mean, if they have that closed-minded perspective, they can never come to play like you are, you know? Like you're on a different level when you're thinking in that realm. But if you're limiting yourself to the opinions of other people, I mean, there's no quicker way to just go ahead and fold up shop than to take that avenue. So you gave some advice. I think it was the first time I actually got to see you present in person. It was at the Arkansas Bankers Women in Banking Conference in Little Rock. It feels like 100 years ago, but I think it was only like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe longer. And it was so great to see you in person. I'd been following you for a while. And the advice that you gave was to be humble and accessible. And you certainly live that, because I remember the first time that I did learn who you were, I immediately went to follow you on Twitter and you followed me right back. And I remember reaching out and you followed up with me. And I mean, you're living this advice. And I think it's so good. I use this same quote and always give you credit anytime I present, because I think from a leadership perspective, that really can get you a long way with your team. So what's the best advice that anyone has ever given you that has been career changing or life changing?
That's such a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it probably comes from my dad. And I have a great boss that I had at the Federal Reserve that I still just lean upon her wisdom that she corrected me on. I think probably those that have given me points to just basically stay humble. My dad, you know, he would say, you know, there's, I don't know if I can cuss in here, but he's like, don't bullshit a bullshit. You know? So it's like this authenticity, you know, that's really important to have, that you want to make sure you're being genuine and accurate in what you're saying. And my friend Scott Williams, who's very prolific on social media, his rules for social media are to be genuine, to be accurate, and be positive, which kind of goes into my dad's advice. And then the other great advice I had was from Paula Edwards, who is my manager at the Federal Reserve. And Paula has this amazing quality to be very demanding, but also very maternal in how she works with those that she leads. And she's responsible for leadership throughout the Federal Reserve system. She's just a leader manufacturer. I mean, she's really incredible. But I remember there was two situations with her that really stand out to me that I carry with me quite a bit. And I was being considered for this big role at the Fed, and I talked about it, and I was not supposed to talk about it. And she just said, no one likes a big mouth. And so she would just basically, you know, she's like, you know, just don't be a big mouth. You don't want to be talking about things or what you're considering. You don't have to verbalize everything that you're thinking. And so that stuck with me so well. And it was in the perfect moment that I really needed that intervention. And then at the same time, I was promoted to manager and skipped this assistant manager role, which was kind of this lockstep to go through at the Fed. And she was my manager at the time. And she told me that I wasn't ready for it, but that I was going to be successful at it. And, you know, just having someone that said it's like okay not to be ready for something and then lean into it and just do it. And from that moment on, she treated me like a peer. It was never, ever even a mentor. She wasn't even a mentor to me anymore. She gave me all the respect that position that she had for everyone else. And so those were just really profound moments. I think one other thing is I love when women, especially, this sounds really mean, but when they're kind of alone in their leadership and they're standing up for something and they're all by themselves. And there was a case where our very unpopular governor was sitting by herself in the balcony of the Senate, watching the legislators vote on a teacher raise that she had been advocating for. And she was all alone by herself there. And again, at the end of her term, very, very unpopular, but there she was. And that, just like those visions of someone standing by themselves, you know, all alone with really nothing to gain. I mean, those are things where you're like, okay, if she can do that, then surely I can.
Yeah, that's very powerful. That kind of gave me goosebumps. I mean, it takes just a whole other level of bravery to step out there and do those things, knowing that you're not going to have that support necessarily, but to do it anyway.
Yes.
What would you say is your, as of today, because I know by tomorrow, you'll have already accomplished the world over again. What, as of today, what is your greatest accomplishment? What brings you the most joy, the most pride in terms of things that, that Jill has done?
It's such an easy question to answer. It's whenever you have someone that you have worked with and that you get to see what they accomplish, whether it's children or your spouse or a coworker or a teammate, or you know, that's where I get the greatest joy, is whenever I get to see others have those accomplishments and know that you know, you had something to contribute to it. You know, I came from an exceptionally broken family. And so to see my children have the stability and achieving some levels of success and having a desire to learn and serve, you know, just is like, oh my gosh, okay, my life is complete. So, yeah. And the same with teammates, like whenever you see someone's ready to take your job, I mean, that's
right.
The best situation in the world when you've got people around you that you just see winning and achieving higher and higher status. And it, turnover is really hard to have, but I also love like writing letters of recommendation for someone who's wanting to do something that we can't offer them anymore.
Right. I mean, what a great testament to success to know that you've got people lined up that can take your job. I mean, that really is a testament to leadership for sure. I've enjoyed staying or keeping up with your daughter, Olivia. I've always had this dream, and here I am 38 years old, and I never learned how to do a back handspring. And it was like my goal to learn it before I turned 30. But I loved watching the videos that you would post of her performing when she was cheering and stuff. That is just one of those things I think I'm not going to get to mark off my list, my bucket list of being able to do a back handspring without falling on my neck. But certainly a very talented young woman. And it's great to see the initiative she has, that she's definitely following in your footsteps for sure.
Yeah, she is a strong woman. I mean, it is so neat to see that when you grow up in a healthy way and are supported, there aren't any ceilings. And so it's neat to be a part of that. You'll have to come and visit Natalie. She'll have you doing a back handspring.
Okay. We may need all the spots possible and lots of mats to ensure. So let's talk about what Jill does outside the bank. Like what self-care look like to you? Because I don't know about you, but when I go all the time, I have a really hard time turning off. And even when I am home, I'm working on a project. I'm cleaning the house. I'm organizing a drawer or something insane like that. Like it's, and my husband's always getting on to me. Like, you've got to sit down and just chill out. What is self-care for you?
You know, and I wish I was more, I need to be better at this in the times of COVID, because outside of that, I am exceptionally balanced when it comes to kind of the self-care aspect. I discovered yoga 11 years ago when I first came here, and it really saved me, you know, that in alignment with my faith, you know, just to be able to be kind of be alone and pushing your body and really being able to quiet your mind, which is one of my really, it's a really difficult thing for me to do, is to kind of turn my mind off, and yoga requires you to do that or you can't progress very quickly. So yoga is definitely one. I miss my yoga classes. I go to yoga classes outside of my town, so no one really knows me. And I just get to be part of a community without there being Jill the Banker hat on, or, you know, like Jill community-ish at all. It's just like being part of this little community. It's always been really healthy for me. And in yoga, and you know, my favorite saying is, my ego is not my amigo. And with yoga, it teaches that to you over and over again. You're supposed to be removing your ego, and you're not competing against anybody. Even though I'm hyper competitive, you're supposed to be in your practice. And then also Pilates. I use a Pilates reformer really religiously, and I have one here at the bank in a building adjacent. So I can go sneak over and do 15 minutes or so of Pilates. But I love spending time with my kids. I love going and watching them play their sports, and you know, I take a bath as soon as I get home every day to kind of like
decompress.
Yes, but I can't stay in the bathtub for very long. I've got to be around, you know, and doing things. And but I, you know, I think that's important when you're managing so much as women and moms and wives and leaders, that we do find ways in which we can separate, not mash everything up, which is typically what I do, and be able to really be attentive. I think that's one thing I've been really successful stressful with our kids is when I'm with them, I'm attentive to them. But then whenever they don't need me to be as attentive, then I can kind of check out. And they're also really involved in my work. And so my kids know exactly what's going on at work, what challenges I have, and they provide great advice as they've been growing up. So I think it's important that everyone understands when you have stressors on each side of your life, and that kind of everyone is invested in making sure that I don't have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, no, because we're all just one step away from that all the time, right? Yeah. I feel that way.
Well, and to have friends, you know, I know you've been there for me in different times where, you know, you do get stressed and you do need to put things back in perspective. Yeah. And I have an executive coach, and so I meet with him 2 hours a week. And that's been something that I've been very disciplined about. That's been very helpful to have someone that you're able to kind of talk about things with, and they can give you a harsh sometimes feedback about what you need to do better. And yeah. This last couple of weeks, he's told me, like, you need to take a week off because I really haven't had any time since COVID started, and that I just really need to exit. And so, I'm ready to do that Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, no, everybody needs to make sure they do that. And it's been hard this year because, you know, some of us were working from home, others weren't. We were back and forth, and it seemed weird to take time off. Well, you know, it just didn't seem the same.
It might not be the most appropriate analogy, but I've used the term economic first responders with our staff as we were called into action with COVID. And it must feel a lot like a doctor who has the skills to help people and knowing that there's still sick people in the hospital, but they have to take a break in order to be attentive to right. the needs. I mean, I can't imagine that anxiety, but I have a better sense of it this kind of season where it felt like, you know, people are hurting right now, and I've got mm-hmm. tools to help them either from an advocacy standpoint or being there for them or by deploying our talent and treasure to our community. That anxiety of like knowing that there's no one else coming, you're in. So yeah. So how do you turn that off? It's so hard. You want to be just completely invested and know that it's just a season that may be a little bit more of an investment than what you would normally have.
Yeah, it is kind of a decision that you have to make yourself. You have to be the one that decides to take that break, because if you don't take the time to shut off and like your phone recharge, like we all do every night, then, you know, you're going to be pulling from an empty bucket or pouring from an empty bucket, which just isn't feasible, especially when we've all gone at the level that we've gone this year. Can you imagine what 2020 would have been without the pandemic? I mean, I look back at our goals and our plans that we had, and it's like, well, that all went out the window.
Well, and you know, I've always loved being accessible, and you know, that's been in times of non-crisis. And then here, you know, accessibility was really appreciated, but it was just overwhelming to be able to handle and prioritize. And so, you know, you really need people to help protect you too, or mm-hmm. they're intervene, or especially when you disappoint others. Like there was one Saturday where I had a DM every single minute on Twitter with small businesses around the nation, trying to match them up with community banks or educate them about PPP. And these weren't our customers, and we weren't making any money off of them, but there was such desperation and it just felt like no one else was helping. And so I look back and I should have really engaged with some friends and, you know, said, how do we put an army together right. rather than just kind of doing this solo?
So what is next for Jill? you know, we could look at 2021, but even in the next 5-10 years, and that may be a question that is very loaded too, but what, you know, I'm sure you feel too that you have accomplished so much, but when you're geared like you are, I know that you're never satisfied with what you've already accomplished. You're already thinking what's ahead. So what is next for you?
I mean, there's so much on the banking side. And I mean, when I think about accomplishments, it's more about like kind of where the bank what has happened with the bank, you know, turning around the bank and getting past that point, consolidating branch locations, filing our first patent. But there's so much culturally growth. Unfortunately, sometimes there's a disconnect with what leaders' vision of the culture needs to be and what the culture really is. And, you know, we're always trying to reconcile those two things. And so, you know, I think there's so much work to do to get we really are striving to be an industry defining organization. And we've done that to some degree, but it's not enough to be able to ensure that we can be here for 100 more years. And so, you know, 5-10 years from now, I hope to see this team mature and achieve so much of their potential. You know, I look around our downtown and it's really revitalized as a result of the work of this team, but there's areas of our community that are underserved and have not experienced the same revitalization. I hope that whenever I look into the future that we've been able to have an impact in those areas and seeing the same type of economic vitality as what is in next door to us. You know, I think one thing I've learned over the past couple years is that the things that I think most bankers look for have traditionally been on like the top 10 list of what you want to accomplish in your career, and that are kind of the normal things, you know, whether it's leading an association or if it's serving on this committee or getting appointed to this role. What I have found that those are not things that really interest me as much. I really love being able to be in the moment, to being an advocate for others, and to just figure out how God can use me in the best way possible and not really having expectations on what that means.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that along with everyone listening and everyone else that follows along with you, we'll all be anxiously awaiting to see what 2021 and what the next few years look like for you and your team. And for anyone that is listening that would like to follow along, I always like to offer this up for our listeners. Where can they find Jill and Citizens Bank of Edmond online?
Super easy. So it's just my name. So for the individual part, so they can find me on LinkedIn. Twitter is just at Jill Castilla, same for Instagram. They can friend me on Facebook. I'm not very good with like TikTok or Snapchat. And those probably aren't the best ways. Email is probably the worst. And they're welcome to text me at 405-808-8993. I'm terrible with voicemails, so texting is also. But we would love to have folks visit us. We have lots of bankers come by when they're in town, or if you're driving down I-40 or I-35, and take a little detour to Edmond. I'm pretty much always here at First and Broadway, and we'd love to have visitors stop by.
That's so awesome. I love that you give your cell phone out. It's such a brave thing to do, but talk about being humble and accessible. There's nothing more accessible than that.
I enjoy it. I mean, so many, the accessibility, people ask about these crazy opportunities. Like we got to partner with Mark Cuban a couple times this past year. And the only way that that's possible is through making yourself available to everyone and not knowing what an engagement's going to lead to, just but authentically engaging and valuing the person that you're engaging with, because that's where the magic has happened. It hasn't been because we just decided to partner with Mark Cuban. We didn't. That was because a community came around us and knew us well and were able to advocate for us to make that happen. So it's just so important to continue to expand your network, to treat everyone with respect, no matter what level. Yes. That they are, and because all of that just comes around with so much goodness.
Yeah, for sure. And if you do go visit them and you don't already have a Pike Pass from previous experience, be sure you take all the quarters. There was one time I went to visit Jill and it's like my car produced change under my seat. I don't know how it did it, but I ended up having to run. If there's like a warrant for my arrest out there, it's because I did run through the Pike Pass or the Turnpike without paying. I just literally was stuck and I didn't have it. And then, you know, I'm a banker. I just didn't have any change.
There was a policeman here asking about you not long ago.
I feel like my name is out there in a bad way. So maybe be sure that you load up with quarters before you go visit Jill. But Jill, thank you so much for taking some time today. I know that you're super busy. It means so much to me, all that you've done for me and for women in banking and for community bankers and for taking time to be on the podcast. So thank you so much.
It means so much to me to be on it. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Be sure to subscribe to the Girl Banker podcast so that you don't miss an episode. And follow me on Instagram at The Girl Banker. The views and opinions expressed in the Girl Banker podcast are those of the individual participants and do not reflect the official policy or position of any financial institution or agency. It is produced by Natalie Bartholomew and Bobby Hudspeth.